Why are Californians saying no on Prop 8? It's a drastic step to strip people of rights, pushed by out-of-state special interests, and a major threat to our basic constitutional protections. It's unnecessary. No person should suffer discrimination, and California laws should treat everyone equally. Because regardless of how you feel about marriage, it's wrong to treat people differently under the law. No on 8. Unfair, unnecessary, and wrong.
Bear Podcast, the podcast for bears and cubs, episode 232. Hey everyone, welcome to Bear Podcast. This is Nard.
And this is Ray, podcasting on the iPhone.
Podcasting on the iPhone. Okay. This is kind of weird if you guys are listening to it because Ray's got some internet problems, so we're doing it via the iPhone. So.
I don't have internet problems. I just don't have any internet right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you have an internet problem. What happened? You just went down or something?
It just went down. It went down the other day, and we've been, you know, fighting with the powers that be trying to get somebody out here to work on it. So because they're saying it's between the box and the house somewhere. So.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can't ping our router, so we're just like, okay, we'll get somebody here and work and fix it. So,
yeah. So how's your weekend? What happened this weekend for you guys?
Nothing much. Just a quiet, short weekend. We had the HAB anniversary party, which was very nice. Raised almost $670-something for Hatch over the weekend with a silent auction.
Oh, that's right. Money. You know what? I was so lucky. Well, not really lucky. I was really trying to fend off everyone who goes near the DVD because I had to win that DVD. Those two DVDs.
You just went for bear porn. That's all it was.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm all for the bear porn. I was trying to fend off Bruce. He wanted to get the DVDs also, but he got a massage.
That's okay. I was bidding on the massages by Mr. Tritico. So.
Did you get any?
Yeah. Actually, the one that I bid on, somebody outbid me. I think Joel outbid me, but I didn't realize John went on there. He'd bid on one, too, and he won it, so.
Mm-hmm.
So he got me one, so. And I think Patrick bid on the other one and was fighting somebody for it.
Oh, gosh. You made a lot of money out of that. That's awesome. Yeah, so. Yeah I was only just there for the DVD. There are two of them. Got it for $35. One is from Cyber Bears and one from Bear Films, which is awesome. And yep. It's good. I've already watched it and did things with it. It's pretty sticky right now. Anyway, shout out to... What?
With the arrows.
With the arrows? No, I didn't. Actually, last Friday we celebrated the birthday for Jerry and
it was their birthday. Jerry and Wayne's birthday.
It was the first time for some of them to eat Korean food.
I know.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I'd eaten any, and I was having to get Wayne. Said, okay, Wayne, remind me what everything is.
Some of them you can't recognize. Well, some of them, you know, they have seaweed. They have the spicy potatoes, and they have the kimchi. You guys didn't touch the kimchi.
I don't think so.
You didn't like it? In the other table, they liked it, I guess. But it's pretty good. I like the spicy, what is that? The bean sprouts. Well, I'm just talking about the appetizers. When the real meat came in, we just had to cook it ourselves, chicken, beef and pork, and mix it around on the the stove or the burner. There's a burner in the middle. Yeah,
there's a grill.
The grill, yeah, the grill was there. It was pretty good. I liked it. I should do it again. I should bring Mike there once. And it's a good choice. Was that your idea to go to a Korean restaurant?
I hadn't been in a couple of years. I think the last time I was there about 2 or 3 years ago with a Butch. So we used to go there and eat with him on occasion. So
I see.
Okay. And I was just like, you know, it's close to Wayne. Let's go out there, you know. So.
Oh, okay. But anyway, okay. To all of you guys listening out there, we have a special episode. because we have Gary from Erie, Pennsylvania, talk about trench firm.
Yeah, that's it.
Nice.
Nice butt.
Yeah, sure.
So what's your number?
Can I buy you a beer? Do you work out a lot? Do you come here often? Woof, what a bear.
Hey, everyone, this is Nard.
This is Ray.
Yes, and we have a special guest in this episode. We would like to welcome Gary, the organizer of Drenched Fur in Erie, Pennsylvania. Glad to have you on board, Gary. Hey.
Thanks, guys.
We've been talking about this for some time now, and I've been hearing about you, Gary, from Jeff. Jeff, he's in the Chaser show. He's the chaser who goes to Drenched Fur all the time.
I wouldn't say he's the only chaser, but
oh yeah, that's right.
He does go, yes. But he's the most popular.
He does that. He does articles for Bear's Life magazine too. Yeah.
Yes.
So he's very busy. So Gary, where are you? Where are you now?
I'm actually at home in Erie.
Oh, okay. You're a native of Erie?
Yes, I actually am a native, born and raised, but lived in a couple other places, and I came back home.
I see. Okay. Wow, Erie, Pennsylvania. So, you started Drenched Fur. Yeah. So this is a show about Drenched Fur. So tell us about Drenched Fur. How did it come about?
Another gentleman and I, John Riley, about 5 years ago now, were talking one time. We were out at a bar and we were just chatting up about how there really isn't much of a bear community in our city. It's a smaller city and the majority of the bear communities are around us in what we call the tri-state area. There's one in Cleveland, Ohio. There's actually two around Cleveland. There's one in Buffalo, and then there's one in Pittsburgh to the south of us, but not really in Erie. And the majority of the guys that consider themselves bears or like being active in bear events go to those places. And John and I were talking, and we have an indoor water park that's open all year round, and he had said, hey, wouldn't it be fun if we had maybe like a dozen guys get together to go to the water park in the afternoon, you know, just kind of hang out. And you know, and it was one of those like, hey, let's be big kids at heart kind of thing.
Oh yeah, I like that. I like water parks too. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it was funny, and I said, okay, like, you know, let's figure out how to do it. So we started planning. We found out that, you know, you could get a special rate as a small group, and so we started working on that. And we were in a bar, and one of the bars in town, and the owner overheard us talking, and he said, hey, if you want to have an event here and, you know, and kind of tie it in, I'd be, you know, willing to do that. And it was funny because John and I were like, no, not really. We're just doing an afternoon event. And he said, oh, okay. You know, he said, well, just think about it. So we started planning it, and it was literally an afternoon event. And all we wanted people to do was pay to go to the water park. And we started setting that up, and we thought if we're really lucky, we'll get about 2 dozen people. And before we knew it, we had started, you know, like kind of doing some very light advertising locally and putting the word out in January. And within about 2 months, I would say we were probably looking at about 40 to 50.
Wow.
And yeah, it kind of mushroom clouded on us. So the first year we had over 70 people. We quickly got a hotel with a discount rate. We talked to the bar, and they did a bar night. We got Kendall to be our entertainment.
Of course.
John was acquaintances with. I never knew Kendall before that, and since then, he and I are like, you know, family. And it just kind of happened. And, you know, it was a big success. We had over 130 people, I think, show up at the bar that night. It was like standing room only. We had a little buffet dinner. There was entertainment. There was a dance. I mean, it was amazing to watch it happen out of almost nothing. And then after the event, John had said to me, he said, no offense, he said, I don't want to really be involved and be in charge anymore, you know, because he said he saw the writing on the wall and it was just going to get bigger. And he has already done big events in the past and in his history with the bear community. And I said, that's fine. So I took
so
the full reign.
Left alone doing it by yourself?
Well, no. It was he and I that did pretty much all of it the first year. And then going into the second year, I luckily had some folks here that are now very good friends of mine that I was friends or acquaintances with at the time. And now we have a committee. And it just kind of kept growing from there. We switched a hotel. We kept going back. We've had some different entertainers. It kind of expanded and made it a full
run weekend as of year two. And so we've done 4 years now, and we're looking to plan number five right now.
That is awesome. You know what? With the other bear runs, it's usually done by a bear group, a local bear group, like the Dallas would do it. Dallas Bears would do it, TBRU, or Houston Air Bears would do Bear Watch during May. Yours is not really a club, but it's just you and a bunch of guys just organizing it, and specifically for Drenched Fur.
That's true, and it kind of makes me smile when every year people say, why don't you guys have a bear club? You know, because they talk about it, and if you go online and look at some of the popular bear profile, you know, chat community websites, you'll see, you know, that there's a number of people that list themselves. But then I tease and I say, well, there's a difference between guys who list themselves online and guys who actually ascribe or say that they are members of the bear community. And I said, the six of us that make up the committee are pretty much it. I mean, there's a couple others beyond that. But, you know, when you look at a profile listing of 30 or 40 folks in what, you know, listing themselves in Erie, they're, I think it's more they have an affinity. They like the concept of the community or the type of guys that are in the community, but not, they don't walk around with the letter, you know, the big B, as in, you know, they're a bear or a cub. They just, they kind of like that aspect, you know, of what the community provides. So, yeah, we're kind of unique because we don't have a club that that sponsors or makes it happen. It's all us.
Yeah, well, that's usually the way it goes. I mean, we're in the Houston of what, 4 million people, and we have 90 members in the Houston Air Bears, and there's like 20 that do everything. So you're getting good to have six.
Well, it's funny to me because I'm also an officer with the Berg Bears in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I'm the events manager for them. I have been for a couple of years, and I'm also in charge of their bear run that we do over Labor Day weekend. And the dynamics are different when you have a club that sponsors the event versus a group of individuals. The way you create things and the way you put things together, to me, are different, even though I'm in charge of both of them. And it's because when you have a club that's backing it and sponsoring it and their name's attached to it, the creation and the process, I feel, is a little different than when it's just a handful of us, because a handful of people who hold all the responsibility and all the decision-making power can just work on it and not really have an accountability, I guess, back to a larger organization as far as funds and namesake and those types of things. So, it's pretty interesting. And what I do is I really try to incorporate the local bear clubs. I offer for them to help sponsor, like, a social event during the weekend. So, it's a reciprocal. I know members of all the clubs in the local areas. I've been members of the clubs in the local areas, and so I appreciate them. You know, it's a handshake deal. They come to the run, we go to theirs, you know, we co-sponsor back and forth, and everybody, it's a win-win situation.
So how far is Erie from Pittsburgh? I'm not too familiar.
It's about 130 miles, about 2 hours.
Wow, okay.
To the north of it.
So you live in Erie, and then you attend the events in Pittsburgh with the Berg Bears from time to time. Okay.
I've been doing that for 8 years now.
Wow, that's dedication. 8 years. And you've always been in the community too, huh?
Yeah, well, I came out into the bear community in the year 2000, and I was introduced to the Berg Bears by an old college friend of mine when I saw him out at a campground that was having a bear weekend. And one of the other local bear clubs, actually from Ohio, was hosting a camping bear run. And I saw him, and we hadn't seen each other in probably 5 years, and we, you know, picked up right where we left off, you know, talking, and he said that he was a member of this Berg Bears in Pittsburgh, and he said, I think you'd really like it. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, check it out. So I went to a potluck dinner, and I made instant lifelong friends and connected with it. So the Berg Bears is my family. They are who has been there for me and is part of helping me. So that's part of the reason why I'm an officer, and I dedicate a lot of my time to them, because, you know, we didn't have that here in Erie. And I do get teased about, well, you know, if you're so active and you have all these, you know, events and things and you can do this stuff, why don't you just put together a club? And And then I try to point out to people, I'm like, yeah, but a club of 8, maybe 10 people, if that, like, will that really justify having an organization or not?
We have clubs like that here in Houston. But, like Ray, what is it? Like the Misfits or Brotherhood of Pain? There were less than 10 people, and they were around for years until people moved.
It all depends on who's in charge of the group and who's doing what and how well it's being run to get people in and out of it. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and I mean, like the Berg Bears, we have currently 114 members. And when I joined 8 years ago, I think there might have been between 30 and 40 members, possibly. So it's not that I couldn't probably create something with the guys here. I do spend, you know, about 3 times a month going to Pittsburgh and dedicating towards that. And so I guess it's really not fair maybe to the local community, but I really kind of feel dedicated to what I've been doing and keeping that going.
Yeah, that is awesome. Even if you're 130 miles away, have you planned or have you thought of moving to Pittsburgh, or you're there in Erie because of commitment?
My family's here in Erie, and there's not a tie-down commitment to that, but it's helpful to be close to them. And I also have my job that's here that I currently enjoy that I'll be doing for a couple more years. You know, I don't imagine me potentially staying with this position, you know, until retirement, but it's there. And the guys in Pittsburgh sometimes do kind of kid me and say, hey, why don't you consider moving down here? But then I tease them, and I'm like, yeah, but the cost of living is more. You know, and then they're like,
oh,
yeah,
that's
but you make
true.
More.
Yeah, that's true.
They're like, but you make more money. And I'm like, yeah, but the cost of living is more. And I kind of make fun of them. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, am I really going to get ahead? So.
Well, and that's, I guess that's how it is in Pittsburgh. Ray, let me ask you, we have a water park beside our hotel here in Bay, for Bear Watch. Maybe we can do the same what they're doing.
Not without a lot more money.
Oh, that's right. Cost a lot. Does it cost a lot, if I may ask? I mean, you know, Gary, when you do it there at the location you do it, the water park?
Well, I'll be honest with you, guys. The first 3 years, we went in the afternoon when the regular public goes. And the time of year that we go is usually late winter, the beginning of spring, and it's typically what the water park calls spring break for them. A lot of high school and college kids go on spring break, and it's probably their busiest time of year, period. Mm-hmm. And when John and I first picked it the first year, we didn't know that that was the case. We just picked the date because we thought it would be kind of fun to have a late winter, beginning spring kind of kickoff, you know, get out of hibernation kind of concept. And so we went in the afternoon. And all 3 years, we kept hearing from the guys, it's great, it's fun, but there are tons of kids and lines screaming. And it's kind of a funny joke because, you know, as much as they like looking at the daddies, and we're talking real daddies, you know, with their kids in tow next to them, they did say, you know, it's fun, but is there any way we could get the entire water park exclusive? And we looked into it the very first year, and we knew that there was a way, and they do this thing called after-hours events. Oh. And what it is when the water park is shut down to the public, and that's why they call it an after-hours event. It's normal public hours are closed. You can pay them a very lovely fee, and you get the entire water park exclusively for 4 hours.
That is awesome.
It is. We did it last year for the first time, and I was a little concerned. And so was the committee. What we were concerned about was behavior. Because, you know, we had to recognize, let's look at what we're putting into this equation. We're going to put in a couple hundred bears in a water park that has a locker room, you know, and you start trying to put those pieces together. And if anyone's been to a bear run and paid attention to the pool or the hot tub. I mean, you know, you have to recognize that. And we also know from the first 3 years that when we went into the water park, we take over the 40-seat adult hot tub. And it is bears as far as the eye can see. And
yeah, I'll see the pictures.
And that's what's funny is that we hear these urban rumors every year about how the staff shows up and scowls and stands and watches the behavior. And you know, but I've been in charge of it, you know, and with John the first year, and no one's ever said anything. And every year we're allowed to go back, you know, they, you know, and I'm kind of like, I think there's just a slight disgruntlement, and it's probably the first 3 years was the general public.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the big joke, and this was one of my favorite parts, was that these young girls and their two-piece bikinis would come walking into the adult hot tub, and there'd be two or three of them, and they'd be chit-chatting, and they would be oblivious. They would not be paying any attention, put their towels down, come walking over, and there's like five steps. And they would get the first step and look around, the second step, look around and slow down, and by the third step, they would stop moving.
Oh,
and
no.
They would see this adult hot tub full of all these, you know, heavy-set, hairy men, most of them.
Water overflowing. Yeah.
Yeah, well, they'd look at each other, and they wouldn't say a word, and one of them would just kind of give that, like, head toss, like, let's get out of here. And they'd turn around, and they'd grab their towels, and they'd leave. And I thought, and it's probably one of the things that I will remember forever that makes me smile and laugh, because I'm like, yeah, well, you know, I'm sure there are times in our lives when we go someplace and there's a brief moment that you feel just a little kind of out of element.
Yeah, and then you have to get out.
Mm-hmm. That's terrible. Yeah, so we you know, we've enjoyed that. But last year, we did go on Friday night. We went exclusive, just us. And I have to tell you guys, honestly, I thought the first year, looking out on a crowd of 150 guys packed into the bar, you know, over 120, 130 of them, you know, were there for the run. There were some local folks. Mm-hmm. It was one of those, like, could I capture this moment forever? And when last year happened, I walked out because the water park that we have has a large balcony area on the, where the second level is. There's an arcade, there's a bar, there's all these different things in this place. And I'm standing there on the balcony, and I looked over the edge, and it was just this amazing moment to see every person in the park except for the staff, like the lifeguards and that. Everybody was there. Or a cub, or a chaser. I mean, it was all our demographic, and it really was one of those, like, I think I'm going to have a moment, like, just to myself. And I just stood there for about a minute and just watched, because it was so funny, and I was like, now this is what it's all about. And so when everybody was coming up and they said, we took a big group picture, and...
Oh, I saw that. Is that the one in the very front page?
Yeah.
That's the group picture. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was really kind of fun, and that's when I said to myself, I'm like, this is the ticket, this is what it's about. And a lot of guys were like, that was the best time ever, you have to go back, like, and do exclusive. Like, it was kind of one of those, like, I didn't get threatened, but I definitely realized, like, if we didn't go at night, people would probably, you know, not say some nice things.
Yeah, that's right. I was wondering, probably it would be a long stretch for you guys if you ask there's going to be a clothing optional water park event. Probably not.
For us?
Yeah. Or are we gearing towards that?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I'll kind of answer it like this. Every year we get asked, is it clothing optional? Which the first 3 years we were always saying, it's a public venue. Like, there are kids and women and you know, I mean, you know, and parents, and then they would say, oh, and I think everyone immediately, for some reason, because it's called Drenched Fur and they know that it's all about going to a water park, I think logically they kept presuming it was just us. Mm-hmm. And then last year when I got asked the question, and so did the committee, we weren't surprised. We've been dealing with it for a couple of years, but we did have to tell them, we're like, no, it's still a public venue event. And, you know, you've got an entire complement of staff. I mean, I think there's a staff about 40 to 50 people working when we go.
Okay.
You know, all those slide and in the water slide operators, the, you know, the people that have the inner tubes, the ones that are taking care of the locker room, the bartenders, the folks at the cafe that cook the food. I mean, everybody's there. So I'm trying to explain to them. I'm like, that's not really kosher. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, if it was a water park, maybe in a nudist colony or a clothing optional, you know, acreage, maybe. But yeah, unfortunately, and so no, we're not really gearing towards that, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
I think it's probably for the best for the staff anyways, because to be honest, you know, we've got 18, 19-year-old college kids that are working this thing. So I think we'd be better off if we kind of, you know, save that for other events or venues, perhaps. Yeah.
We had the same similar thing, you know, Ray.
Huh?
Go ahead. There's something about Bear Watch about that too, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was the hardest thing when we had to move, when we were looking for Bear Watch for a new hotel, going in and sitting down with the manager, whoever it was, and say, okay, we're going to have 200 big hairy guys in here that want to be clothing optional in your pool. Are you okay with that? And, of course, we checked everything else out first, and that was the deal breaker there for us. But it was amazing some of the reactions we got. And then the one that we're at, the place we're at now, I said, that's no problem. As long as they keep it inside the pool area and it's covered up and nobody can see it and my staff can't see it, we're fine. Mm-hmm. And I was like, cool.
Wow. Let's do it. Amazing.
So, there's something I should suggest.
But, and, you know, and people say, well, why don't we move to this hotel? Why don't we move to that hotel? That hotel is much nicer. I'm like, yeah, but that hotel won't let you get your butt-ass naked in the pool either, so.
That's right.
And I love, Ray, how you point out the benefits for him. It's like, okay, listen, you get the nicer hotel, you don't get to run around naked. Like,
that's right.
Make up and, your mind.
And come on, you're a group of bears. Which more do you want? Besides the food, what's the other thing on your mind?
Well, yeah, I mean, and I've told my guys that. I'm like, when it comes to bear runs, you have to provide them with a handful of essential things. A place to sleep, food, a way for them to socialize / hook up. You know, yeah. And as long as you've got those three core things, you're pretty good to go. You know, yeah. Somewhere outside.
How about alcohol? Alcohol.
Well, I was gonna say somewhere outside of that, a bar night, you know, a function of some sort, you know, maybe a hospitality room with a bar, you know, just something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Gary, I was a
Gary. I will say one thing from one committee member to another, from one bear event to another. A foam pit.
Yeah, that's what I'm about to say. Suggestion. Get a foam pit. Yeah.
Until you're in the foam pit and you realize that the person you're groping is Maynard.
Oh, no.
Sorry, Maynard.
You have to look lower. I'll be crawling in there. Yeah, somewhere. Yeah, it's always fun. I mean, it's the first time I've ever been to a foam pit that time at the Bear Watch. And it's just fun coming in and out. And, you know, covered with foam and just walking around and you get to grope, whatever. I don't know. It's just a thing that you might be interested in, Gary. Yeah.
Well, we'll think about it. I'm like racking my brain going, I'm not quite sure how it make that happen, but.
I don't know. That's
the gist. I mean, it would take a large amount of soap suds or whatever to create that, especially if we're going to try to do it in the water park, which the water park holds, I think it's, I'm going to get my numbers wrong, I think the capacity of the water park itself is like 1,500 or 1,600 people. It's a big place. So,
yeah.
You know, and that's what some people used to say the first 3 years is, why can't you take the place over? And I was like, well, because one, it's large and I would need to be bigger than practically any bear run in existence in order to fill the place.
Yeah.
And then I said, you know, and then just the sheer dynamic of organizing that, you know, just kind of made me sit and take pause for a moment and say, I would need a much bigger committee staff to make that happen. But yeah.
But you know, there's always somebody out there like, you know, y'all should do that. I bet you could do it. And you're sitting there looking at them like, have you lost your damn mind?
Well, my background, my occupation past, I was a business manager for a gay campground resort.
Oh, okay.
So I'm used to that when people come up and they're like, you know what you should do? I think you should do this, this, and this. Or if I was the owner, I would do this, this, and that. And it makes me kind of just smile and you nod your head. And it's funny because from working from a private-owned businesses, when you work for yourself, not so much self-employment, but you work like kind of mom and pop, you know, that small business
that's
concept,
small. Mm-hmm.
Everything is a different dynamic. You know, it's like, well, I think that you should, you know, give away, you know, tea and biscuits to everyone that comes through the door. You know, and you look at them and you're like, do you know how much tea and biscuits cost? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, mm-hmm. Do you realize how that affects the payroll and that kind of stuff? And Ray, I'm sure you would agree. It's the same thing with a bear run when they're like, well,
yeah.
I think that you should give away free liquor all weekend long.
That's true, yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that's a great idea. And your run fee will now be $200.
Exactly.
Yeah, alcohol is very important in events. But I know about in campground. Which campground were you in?
I used to be the business manager at Roseland campground resort. It's actually now I think they've titled Roseland Resort. It's in West Virginia. It's a very beautiful place. It's a great space to go to.
Nice. Okay. Mm-hmm. So at the Drench for events, what's usually the location in Erie? The host hotel, and do you have that planned already?
We do not have that planned for next year. And to give a little bit of history, the first year we just magically picked a hotel. And to be honest, the reason that we picked the hotel the first year was because there is, of all the things people probably know nothing about, there is a, I think it's, if it's not regional, it's National Cross-Dressers Convention that takes place in Erie, of all places.
All right. And Cross-Dressers Convention.
And so to help explain, they came to Erie. They were meeting in Erie due to, it's called Gala, and the what they're called the Erie Sisters, these folks that cross-dress, they were having their kind of convention get-together at this hotel. And when I'd been told that through the grapevine, I was like, well, no offense, but if they're going to accept that as the type of a convention, I'm sure they're not going to have an issue with us. Because, I mean, that speaks volumes about a business if they're open to that type of an event. I mean, it's kind of like if they allow the leather convention. I mean, you know, it's all what most people that are not aware of those would probably consider fringe or alternative groupings. And so I said, well, what the heck? We'll contact them.
Yeah. And of course, the bear community is a big market right there.
And it is. And so we talked to the sales director who became a good friend of mine. And he was the one that warned us the first year when we said we just wanted Saturday night only. And he goes, well, I'll give you the rate for the weekend. And he says, you should really think about planning something for Friday night. And this is the first year. And so John and I were like, yeah, you know. And we didn't plan anything for Friday. And I think it's like the week of, and that's when this guy, he's working with us, he says, well, you know, you've got like, you know, I think it was like a dozen rooms booked for Friday night. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of looked at him, and we're like, what? And he's like, I told you, you should really plan something for Friday night. And John and I look at each other, and we're like, and then it was funny, because it was like two little kids, and we're like, but it's not a weekend event, it's just one day. Uh-huh. And so it was like the bear community was trying to tell us it should be a run, like, even though we weren't trying to plan a run. And that's the humor of the first year. So we switched to a different hotel for years 2, 3, 4, because actually, to be honest, the sales director I became good friends with, he moved from one hotel to another. And he treated us like gold. I knew that we got along great. He knew exactly what we wanted. He knew we were going to grow every year. So he gave us that business. And we moved with him. And it was good. And but this coming year, we're actually looking for a new venue space.
But the water park is the same.
Yes, the water park is the same. Okay. We only got one water park, so that piece isn't going to change for us.
Okay, that's good. Let me see. How about attendees? Right now, you say it's growing and growing. And how many?
It has.
How many? How's the biggest right now? So far,
this past year, Drenched for Four was the largest year. The committee and I, the first year was approximately 75. I think the second year was approximately 100, maybe 110. The third year was about 125, I want to say, registrants. And then going into this year, we figured we'd probably hit 150, 170 if we were lucky. You know, just kind of looking at trends. Mm-hmm. And the committee and I talked, and I said, you know what, I really think that we should cap it. I think we should pick a number, and that's how much we're going to sell at, and when we sell out, we sell out, and that's it.
Yeah, you'll reach about that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so my committee, they made me laugh, because they said, well, what should we cap it at? And I said, 200. And they go look at me, and they're like, 200? Why 200? I'm like, oh, that's a nice round number.
very manageable number.
And it is, and we laughed, and here's the best part, you'll love this, Ray. They're like, well, can we handle 200? I'm like, we'll find out if it happens. Like, I knew it was possible, but we were just like, yeah, we'll run with it. Well, then we sold out at 200, I think, like 1 month out. And the committee was just like flabbergasted at watching the numbers come in. I mean, it was just constant, you know. Mm-hmm. January was a good month. February was a really good month. And then by the time we got to March, it was like we were selling out. And the whole committee is just like kind of sitting around going, we did it. Like, we sold out. Like, I mean, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. So we're going to see what happens. This next year, you know, I'm willing to increase the number a very small amount, maybe 225, I would say 250 max, period.
Yeah.
You know, I want to grow the committee a little bit, but, you know, I'll be honest with you guys, there's a lot of things that can affect us, and I'm sure you're both well aware, as the rest of, you know, the listening community is, the economy is a huge, huge piece right now for folks.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That is true.
You know, and, you know, granted, the bear community is a large demographic with you know, a nice disposable income base, but, you know, there comes a certain point where you just can't do everything.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
You know, so I, you know, and I know guys that are being, you know, affected by this left and right around me. I mean, and it's not necessarily that they work in real estate or they work in investment. It's just that everything has been ripple affected over the past year. And so I said to the committee, I said, you know what? I said, I will not be surprised nor displeased if we don't grow in size.
Mm-hmm.
And we maintain where we are, or even potentially, I will be real, we might get a little smaller. And it's not going to hurt my feelings, or, and I think the committee's okay with that too. You know, and to be honest, I mean, Bray, how long have you and Nard been involved with, like, Bear Watch and that? I mean, how many years have you been doing that?
Four years.
Well, Bray is, but I've been involved with Bear Watch since 2001, 2002, yeah, since Bear Watch 3. That's many years now, and it's been growing. It's been growing
a lot. Around, so they've been around, what, over 10 years?
Oh, the group has been around for 14 years. And,
yeah, it's been around 14 years, but this is the 10th year of Bear Watch. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so here's the thing is, when you look at that, I mean, you have a long-standing run, so that always has a return, you know, population of attendance. But the other piece is, now more than ever, there's always something going on a weekend, and year two to year three, I was really feeling a bit of a competitive edge because Sugar Bear Weekend up in Montreal is right about the exact same time. Bear Trek that Steve-O with Bear's Life as mm-hmm. a big sponsor has been putting on mm-hmm. in New York. I mean, you know, and so I've been very aware of the things that are kind of going on around that time of year, and I feel lucky that we're still at a time of the calendar that doesn't get, like, really bogged down. I mean, once summer season starts to hit and you get into the month of May through the month, I would say probably September is a huge amount of events and things.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, one of the things we always have to fight with is people like, why don't y'all make it later in the year? And I'm like, because then y'all couldn't afford to rent a hotel room in Galveston.
Yeah, it'd be more expensive.
Yeah, because as soon as Memorial Day hits, all the hotel rooms prices triple down there.
Yeah. I don't know now, though, because, you know, Galveston is, you know, kind of devastated because of Hurricane Ike. But, but there's some hotels
right
there.
Right now, any hotel that's open, FEMA's keeping them open.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true. I mean, I've been thinking about you guys with that. I mean, when that whole thing, you know, came up and, you know, I'd called in and, you know, and it was funny because, and this is what I like about the Bear community is that it connects people from all over the place, you know, not even necessarily people that you've met in person, but I started thinking about that, and I thought of, you know, you, Ray, and Nard, and that group that helps put together Bear Watch and does things for it, and I thought, I mean, from our perspective, because we don't live there, it looked like just everything was lost, and
I thought, feel that way.
Mm-hmm. It's like you're just starting from ground zero. I mean, you're just starting from the scratch up, and my first thought was, if I was in charge of the event, I mean, I would be like, is there a place to go? Like, can we do it? Or, you know,
well, see, the weekend I hit, we were going down to sign the contract for Bear Watch 10.
Oh, wow.
That's right.
We're meeting with the hotel manager and everything, and then we called it off, and it looked like Ike was going to hit. But the good thing is the hotel we're in, they just built a new tower last year.
Yeah.
So it didn't get any, you know, nothing much happened yet. But the older part of the hotel got flooded in all the first floor rooms. Mm-hmm. So the plan is by May they'll have everything remodeled. So we're pretty much being a brand new hotel again.
Yeah, that's good. Which is good. Yeah. And appreciate that, Gary. Thanks for the call that time. We were okay. We were surviving. We were we were evacuating. Well, not really. We stayed in. Well, Ray stayed in.
I stayed in. You disappeared to New Orleans.
Yeah, I did. I did escape.
Yeah, Ray was staying home, and Nard was in New Orleans, from what I could tell. And then there was this whole, Nard wanted to come home. Ray's like, don't you dare.
Yeah. Like, don't come home. There's no power. It's hot. Stay there.
There's no power.
Get an AC.
So all I did was to drink Hurricanes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and how horrible that must have been to sit in Nolens and do nothing but drink Hurricanes.
I know. To sit at the Phoenix under the pool table drinking Hurricanes. Yeah, that's what he was doing.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about you guys.
Uh-huh. I'm sure you were. Although I can't imagine how easy it is to drink a Hurricane under the pool table at the Phoenix. I've been to the Phoenix, and I'm not so sure about that. But
mm-hmm. How often do you go to New Orleans? Once in a while?
I actually have been 4 times in my lifetime, but I haven't been in far too long. It's been probably about 3 years, 4 years mm-hmm. since I've been. And to be honest, when people ask me about what's my favorite destination, and I tell them it's Nolens, I'm like, it's just the city, and I haven't been since the hurricane and the devastation, and so I with Katrina and that, and there's a part of me watching everything that happened that I don't know if people can understand it. Well, you probably, if you guys have been there, there's just a small part of you that is affected by that.
Oh yeah,
because you've been there. Mm-hmm. And so, unfortunately for me, I've haven't gone back yet, and it's one of those, like, I'm gonna go back just so I can get my beignets and some coffee and go to the French Quarter and do those things. And I know that those areas weren't necessarily affected as much, but it's the culture, it's the history and the heritage.
It's very rich. But,
the whole color, the people that added color to the city that. And I'm not talking about black or white. I'm talking about the artists and the people that were there that worked, did street vending and all that stuff. They're all gone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like it changed a lot. And Houston changed a lot because a lot of those people came to Houston.
Yeah, they had to move. People are working. Mm-hmm.
I know people. It's been an interesting change the last few years since that.
That's right.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens after. Next year, this time, what's happening after iKids and how it affects everybody. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, going back to Drenched Fur, okay. Mm-hmm. Gary, you have a story for us about what happened in the last event. Was it last event?
It was this year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this year. Okay. So what happened?
Can you hear the hesitance in my voice? I'm kidding. I'll be honest, in putting together the runs that I have over the years and being an organizer, a leader in that aspect, there are things that just don't blip on your radar of things that you try to prepare for or expect or maybe have a backup plan or any of those type of things. And this year was one of them. The run was a huge success. Everything went off well. We didn't really have any issues. Everybody was able to get where they needed to. They enjoyed the weekend. We had a comedian. They liked the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the pieces fell into place. It was kind of like the second year. When I first came in, just everybody was loving it. I mean, it was all great, great feedback. And Sunday, we had our silent auction charity event. We raised over $1,000 for the Shriners Hospital here in Erie. And, we were proud, and the committee was good, and we did a little wrap-up meeting. And then... I'm not going to lie and say that it was a perfect weekend, but, as far as runs go, the majority of the feedback was fantastic. Sunday, we're gathered around, we discuss some things, the committee scatters to the four, corners of the world, and because they're all exhausted, and David, my roommate, and I, we were, talking with another friend of mine who was hanging a little bit later, and my roommate, my guest, David, he got really ill. And
wow.
I was, it was one of those things like, he had said he wasn't feeling well, but, it's like, you're obviously not feeling well. And then what happened was that it was Sunday. It was Sunday afternoon going to Sunday evening. Pretty much everybody had left. And I started getting emails. And there was a whole group of guys that came from Toronto, and they had traveled together. And some of them were getting sick on the way home, like trying to go back to Canada. Some guys from Hamilton, Toronto, guys from Buffalo. I mean, and what happened was that first Sunday night I got about maybe 6 emails, and David, who was staying with me, had been sick. I started to feel ill, and I just started putting the pieces together, and I thought, something's happened.
Oh,
and
no.
This huge amount of dread came over me. And I mean, there was probably a good half an hour where I kept thinking, I don't think it's what I think it is. Like, it was, I think it was a disbelief moment. Like, I don't want this to be what I think it is. Okay. And you know how you have that gut feeling and you just kind of can't ignore it. Mm-hmm. So I said to David, I said, I think something happened. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, you know how you've been sick. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, and I'm not feeling too hot. I'm, you know, starting to run a fever and that. And he's like, okay. And I said, well, I'm getting these emails and these guys are saying, you know, that on their way home, they've been getting, you know, ill and some of them pretty violently, you know, very sudden onset. And, you know, immediately I was like, okay, you know, the commonality is that everyone was at the run. So, you know, immediately we started all presuming those that were getting ill that there was something like a foodborne illness. And on Monday, I sent out an email to folks and said, hey, I've been getting some, you know, some word that some people have not been feeling well since the run. If you could get back to me with, you know, some preliminaries about, you know, if this is, you know, something you are sharing. Mm-hmm. You know, as a symptomology, like you're not feeling well or those type of things. And I clarified in the email, I made explicitly and said, this isn't, I partied too much, I drank too much, like I'm exhausted because I never got any sleep. Like this is, you know, I'm sick. And that's when the emails really started to come in. And I just, I mean, and it was a little overwhelming because I was like, okay, this isn't like, you know, five or six people. This is... It turned into a dozen, and then it turned into two dozen. And at that point, I was like, okay, I got to do something about this. So on Tuesday, I contacted the Erie County Health Department, our local county health department, and said, I don't know who I need to talk to, but I believe I need to request an investigation, potentially from a foodborne illness outbreak.
Okay.
Which was the strangest moment of my entire life because I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I didn't know who to talk to and I didn't know what to say. And I talked with some other folks at the health department and they were great. And they said, well, you know, can you explain a little bit of what you know? And so I started explaining the details I had and they said, okay. And they said, can we call you back in like a half an hour? And I said, yeah, no problem. And they said, well, when you call you back, we're going to do a conference call and we're going to pull together a team. And we're going to start, you know, working on this as a case. And I said, oh, okay. And they said, are you going to be available? Because it's probably going to be a long call, and we're going to ask you a lot of questions so we can start working on it. I said, yeah. So I think we had about an hour-long conference call when they called me back. They asked me a bazillion questions about all sorts of stuff, you know, from what was the purpose of the event to, you know, where did people go? What were the vendors? What were your purveyors? Where did you get things? Where did you travel? And it really came down to I had to justifiably release everything to them. Wow. I needed to inform them of who all attended the event, every business we dealt with, every purveyor we purchased things through, where we got our food, where people could have eaten. Some people went to a casino. Some people went to different wineries. Like, I needed to release anything I could get my hands on as far as info because they had to send out teams and do, like, environmental checks. You know, and all this different type of stuff.
It's like CSI.
It was a very big project.